Well, let's jump right in. So last week, we began with Great Smicha Controversy of 1538. And we discussed the back and forth, let me mute everyone again, the back and forth between Rav Yaakov Beirav and the Maralbach about whether or not it was appropriate to grant Smicha in, certainly in the absence of consensus, the Cardinals are here, consensus amongst the Rabbanim throughout Eretz Yisrael. And again, if you remember, everything really centered. Everything centered around that Rambam. And how do you read the Rambam who says that you need all the Rabbanim and Eretz Yisrael to come together and to agree upon one person? And once they give that one person smicha, then you can give smicha to other people as well. If you recall from last week, the Rambam himself alludes to his reasoning for why it is that he's so eager to create an environment where smicha would be able to be given. Let's learn the Rambam once again, just so we're caught back up to speed, because it's actually going to be very important for the back end of our shiur this afternoon. Rambam had written V'yir Ali, right? He says that Keshetia askama mikol hachachamim v'atamidim lahaktim aleihem ish miyeshiva v'yasimo osol arosh, that when everyone gets together and everyone agrees that they are going to make someone who's going to be elevated amongst everyone else, ubilvad shehizeh b'Eretz Yisrael, that has to be in Eretz Yisrael, K'moshe zacharnu, hinei ha'isha hu tiskayim lo ha'yeshiva, v'yasamach v'yismachu, that person can now have smicha, and because he has smicha, he can grant smicha to everyone else. Achar kein, mishi yirtze shim lo tomar kein, yafshar shetimtze beizdin agadol olam l'fisha nitzra, shiakol achar me'am samach ha'kopanim. Okay, so that's the structure the Rambam had delineated last week, in terms of you need all of the Rabbanim and Eretz Yisrael to come together to grant smicha to one person. Once that one person has smicha, again, real smicha, ish mi piish, then it can be granted to other people as well. Ve'akadosh Baruch Hu, now listen to this part of the Rambam, which is the critical part for us going forward. Ve'akadosh Baruch Hu yad sheyeshuvu k'moshen emar, ve'ashiva shovtayich k'varishona, ve'yoatzayich k'vatchila, achreichein yikarei l'cha ir ha-tzedek, v'zeh yeh b'lo safek, k'sheyichon ha-bor yisbarach libos b'nei Yisrael, v'tir b'zchusam v'tshukasam l'shem yisbarach l'torah v'tigadil chachmasam. In other words, why does the Rambam care about restoring the notion of smicha? Because smicha is a prerequisite for the Sanhedrin, and the Sanhedrin is a prerequisite for the building of the coming of Mashiach, and ultimately the building of the Beis HaMikdash. So the Rambam is a very rational person here. And the Rambam says, okay, let's do A equals B, B equals C. We need to get to a point where Mashiach is going to be feasible. In order for Mashiach to come, you need a structure where you can have a Sanhedrin. Well, the only way you could have a Sanhedrin is if you have real smicha. So in order to start the process of Mashiach, in order to, again, I think the Rambam was talking conceptually here, not practically, although we'll see in a second that many people took it in a practical way. But the Rambam conceptually says there has to be a way for smicha to start. Because if there's no way for smicha to start, then there's also not going to be a way for Mashiach to come. Now, if you recall, one of the commentaries we saw last week was the Radbaz. And the Radbaz was asked this very question. Remember, he was written to by the Rabbanim in Eretz Yisrael. He, of course, was in Egypt at the time. And he's written about this entire notion of whether we believe the Rambam, whether the Rambam went back on his word in when he wrote in the Mishnah Torah, and he seemed to have wavered a little bit. But if you recall at the end of the Radbaz that we saw last week, the Radbaz addressed this explicitly. And he says, if you don't accept the premise of the Rambam, so how do you get to the end result of the Rambam? In other words, if you don't accept the premise that smicha, all Rabbanim in Eretz Yisrael, then how are you going to ever get to a point of Mashiach? So if you recall, the Radbaz offered his own suggestion. He says here at the end, He says, Umi yitain, ve'ida sherei Eliyahu ba lifnei Mashiach, kimavur b'ksuvim, ve'ri hu samach v'yismoch acherim lifnei ba Mashiach. In other words, why did the Rambam need to force the issue of smicha? Don't we believe that Eliyahu HaNavi is going to come before Mashiach? Presumably, Eliyahu HaNavi had smicha. And so when Eliyahu HaNavi comes, he can give smicha to other people, and that will be the the mechanism through which we bring Mashiach. And then he says, "V'tu d'bnei Reuven asidim lavo v'lasos mechamos levnei bo melech Mashiach," that the children of Reuven are going to come back. Uman leimalan shelo yabem samach mipi samach v'yismoch achirim. Again, when we talk about Reuven here, we're talking about the 10 lost tribes. And what the Radbaz is saying is perhaps when we find these 10 lost tribes, there'll be someone there who actually has smicha. And then he says, at the end of it, he offers, this is a different suggestion for how you would be able to incorporate this. But needless to say, according to the Radbaz is very sensitive to the Rambam's question, and nonetheless, he finds a different solution from the Rambam. And he says two things. Number one is maybe there's going to be Eliyahu. Number two is maybe the 10 lost tribes are going to be found. And when they find those 10 lost tribes, they'll also find that there is someone amongst them who has smicha. But you see, whether you paskin like the Rambam or whether you go according to the line of the reason of the Radbaz, both are concerned with Mashiach. In other words, both are concerned conceptually with you need a way practically to get you to Mashiach. For the Rambam, that meant smicha. For the Radbaz, he offers other suggestions, one of which is the 10 lost tribes. Now, all of that brings us to really part two, which is the historical part of what we had discussed last week, and that's why now. In other words, why in the 16th century in Sfat was there such a desire to create this structure where Mashiach would be able to come? And the answer, according to many historians, is that for a generation that saw itself as the gate of redemption, the renewal of smicha held the key to that redemption. If you think along the lines of the Rambam, and you view yourself in a messianic era, then you have to figure out a way to bring Mashiach. And the first way you do that is by creating smicha. And so several historians have suggested that specifically, again, this happened in 1538, the middle of the 16th century, there was a fervent awakening of messianic hopes, and because they were dreaming and yearning for a time Mashiach is why they also attempted to create a structure where smicha was once again feasible. Again, I apologize if you're picking up the background noise. I know for myself I find it very disturbing, but I can't control when the gardeners come, although they always seem to come while I'm teaching on Zoom. But so it goes. Okay, so if you look here in source number 22, Heinrich Graetz writes the following in the history of the Jews. He writes, "The appearance of Salomon Molcho, Shlomo Molcho, the martyr of Mantua, had left a deep impression." Now, who is Shlomo Molcho? So on the next page I have for you from the Jewish Encyclopedia, that essentially he was born in Lisbon to Murano parents, and at a certain point, he reconverts to Judaism. And as he returns to Judaism and starts studying Kabbalah, he begins to believe, and that's why Molcho comes from the word Melech, right, but he begins to believe that he is the Mashiach. And he dates the coming of Mashiach to a very specific time period of 1540. So he predicts that Mashiach is going to come in 1540. So says Graetz, "The appearance of Salomon Molcho, the martyr of Mantua," again, he ultimately dies because they find out that he had returned to Judaism, had left a deep impression. Even after his death, there were many people in Sfat, the largest community in Israel, where he had lived for a considerable time, and awakened messianic hopes, who believed in the fulfillment of his prophecies that the Mashiach would appear in the year 5300, what we would call 1540. In other words, despite the fact that Molcho is put to death, he's hung, nonetheless, they still believe in his prediction, in his prophecy, the Mashiach is going to come in 1540. It was, however, the general belief at the time that the Messianic era could not set in all of a sudden, but would be conditioned upon certain preparations on the part of the Jews that would hasten the redemption. Rambam Maimonides, the highest authority, had taught that the Messianic era would or must be preceded by the institution of a universally recognized Jewish tribunal or Sanhedrin. We know that Rambam very well. It was therefore generally acknowledged that it was necessary to have authorized and ordained Sanhedrin judges in Palestine, such as existed during the Temple and in Talmudic times, and to reintroduce the ordination of judges, which had long ago fallen into destitute. Right? So according to Greats, it's very simple. Why? There's this reawakening of a desire to create a structure of smicha. And it's because they believed that 2 years afterwards was when Mashiach was going to reveal himself. And if that's the case, according to the Rambam, you don't just sit around and wait for Mashiach to come, but rather you do something proactively to hasten the redemption. Now, obviously for us, this is a very relevant conversation because we live in a day and age where there is a far-ranging dispute about how proactive we are in the hastening of a redemption. Obviously, as religious Zionists, we believe very much in that. As religious Zionists, we believe that it is our duty, it's our responsibility, it's our mandate to return to Israel and to do our part to hasten the redemption. Others, right, what we would again call Satmar, but it's much more than Satmar. If you read the literature, and we've discussed this in other classes, it was all the Hungarian rabbis, certainly pre-World War II, but they believed that no, you don't have an active participation in the hastening of the redemption, but rather you passively wait. You do tshuva, you learn Torah, you return to Hashem, and when Hashem deems it ready, then Hashem is going to bring Mashiach. So we're very in tune to this conversation of how much do we hasten redemption versus how much do we sit back and allow redemption to happen. The Jews in the 1530s and 40s believed in hastening the redemption. And they believed that the mechanism to be able to do that was by creating smicha. In his article, The Dispute Between Jacob Beirav and Levi Ben Habib Over Renewing Ordination, a wonderful article by Jacob Katz, he writes the following. Maimonides Rambam has no halachic source for his determination, but described his thought process. Right, when the Rambam dropped the A-bomb that you and I learned about last week, this notion of renewing smicha, notice the Rambam never quoted a source for that. Remember, if the Rambam says, V'yireli, it appears to me, that was the Rambam's intuition. So Jacob Katz writes that the Rambam was giving you an insight into his thought process. As is common procedure, he refers to a biblical passage for support. V'yashiva shoftayich k'varishona, v'yachare kein yichare lecha ir atzedek. Right, that was our pasuk in Yeshayahu. Thus, the judge's return would precede redemption. Now, first you need a Sanhedrin before Mashiach come. Since according to halachic principles, a Beis Din is not such in the full sense unless it is ordained in the land of Israel, it is imperative to find a way to renew ordination before redemption. For Maimonides, the rationalist exegete, philosopher, and legalist, this was a purely intellectual clarification of the halacha that would find practical expression only at the indeterminate time of the future. However, in the eyes of a generation that saw itself... Excuse me, John Seth. When you're the rabbi, you get to do that. Okay, so according to Jacob Katz, right, and this is the key line. However, he says, in the eyes of a generation that saw itself at the gates of redemption, ordination renewal became a magic key to facilitate the first human step, which would provide the impetus for the remaining divide steps towards redemption. So this held the key. People who were yearning and craving to bring the Mashiach, smicha held the magic key to create that first step. Okay, I'm going to read for you an Abarbanel, but first I'll read a pasuk in Yeshayahu upon which the Abarbanel based himself. Where the pasuk in Yeshayahu says, "Al tira ki itcha ani," right? Hashem says, "Fear not, for I am with you." Mimizrach avizarecha, mimarav akabtecha. He's talking about the ingathering of the exiles. And he says, I'm going to bring you from the east, and I'm going to bring you from the west. Omar letzafon teini. I'll say to the north, give up. In other words, give them to me. Ula teiman al tichla'i. And to the south, I'll see, right? Don't prevent them. Heviu banai merachok v'nosai mikzei aretz. Return all of my children from the far ends of the earth. Says the Abarbanel, looking at this pasuk, what is this referring to? He says, well, this is referring to something very simple. And that is the ingathering of the 10 lost tribes. Based on that, the Abarbanel says, over here on his commentary in Yeshayahu, V'ashkenaz v'asiyo v'shnat 250 v'shnayim. In the year 5252, which was 1492, of course, the Abarbanel is very aware, very involved in the expulsion from Spain. Heir Hashem es ruach malchei Sfarad. that Spain expelled from their land some 300,000 Jews, souls. Boven shekulam yatsum mikol tzadayim arav, v'kulav amru keneged eretz Yisrael lo levada yehudim, kim gam ha'anusim sheyatsu min haTorah. Right, that these 300, all of them would pass before the land of Israel, not only as Jews, but as conversions. And it was as they were being spread out. Right? Ovrim v'holchim shama, uvezeh ha'ofen heim miskabtzim al admas ha'kodesh, ve'al zeh amar mimizrach avi zarecha, umimarav akabtzeka. So the Barbanel looks in 1492 to this pasuk in Yeshayahu and says, this can't just be happening. Right? It's like we know people who say, COVID, it must be that Mashiach's coming. Right? It must be that if there's such a tragedy, it's because Hashem's bringing Mashiach. Well, here's the bad news and the good news. The good news is that it could be true. The bad news is that Jews for millennia, two millennia, have always believed that whenever there was a negative storyline, whenever there was a negative set of circumstances that was impacting the Jewish people, the response was always, there must be Mashiach coming. It must be. And by the way, that's why those who were reticent about the Zionist movement in the aftermath of the Holocaust, this was their fear. Their fear was that the Jewish people were once again getting caught up in messianic fervor in the aftermath of a cataclysmic event. It's no different than what the Abarbanel writes here in 1492, where he writes something so tragic happened, but it must be that if something as crazy as 300,000 Jews being expelled, it must be because Hashem's about to bring Mashiach. And it must be because they're all about to pass by the land of Israel. That's the returning of the exiles. And this is it. Hashem's bringing the Mashiach. Okay? Now, 1492 to 1538 is very close by. Because what the Abarbanel writes is even the conversos, even those like Shlomo Molcho, who had become a Marano, who had converted out of Judaism, they too, says the Abarbanel, are going to come back in just 46 years later. Right? Not even. A few years later, right? Less than 40 years later, a little more than 40 years later, the Jews are sitting in Tzfat with that messianic fervor, waiting and desiring for the bringing of Mashiach. Now, this was not just in the 16th century. The whole notion of smicha as the predicating factor to the redemption reemerges later on in history, and that is in the time of the Vilna Gaon and his disciples. And here I want to read for you an article by Ari Morgenstern, which is titled Hastening Redemption, Messianism and the Resettlement of the Land of Israel, where he writes the following. The Vilna Gaon's disciples held the view, as taught by the Zohar, that all actively related to the redemption had to begin with an awakening from below, what we call Isarusa Dilatata. In other words, we have to put in the effort first, and following our effort, Hashem will create the Mashiach from above. Accordingly, they saw the very fact of Aliyah as opening the first stage of the redemptive process. That is, the ingathering of the exiles, right? The first thing you have to do is return to Israel. The next stage was not the rebuilding of Jerusalem. Rather, it was the restoration of justice, what we would call Sanhedrin. In other words, establishing an authorized court of ordained sages. In taking that view, Israel of Shklov relied on Maimonides' determination that renewal of ordination was a necessary precondition of the Mashiach's advent. In other words, that same Rambam that you and I were learning, that was used in 1538 to make an argument for the renewal of Smicha, now in the 19th century is once again being conjured up to be used to bring the Mashiach. During the 16th century, right, we know this story by now. Okay, Rav Yisrael of Shklov did not attempt anew to secure the agreement of all the sages of the land of Israel. And as he learned the mistake of Rav Yaakov Eirav, and he recognized that there was no way he was going to be able to get all the rabbis of the land of Israel to agree on one rabbi. Instead, he sought a different path to his goal, apparently relying on a suggestion of Rav David Ibn Zibra, who the Radbaz, who you and I learned last week and we reviewed this week in his commentary on Maimonides. Rav Yisrael of Shklov finds it possible to renew ordination through ordained sages from the 10 tribes. So whereas in the 16th century they looked to the Rambam and they said that the only way to create ordination, to create smicha, and therefore Sanhedrin, is by getting all the Rabbanim and Eretz Yisrael together, what Rav Yaakov Bei Rav didn't appreciate is the end of the Radbaz's tshuva, where the Radbaz says, at some point we're going to find the 10 lost tribes, and maybe amongst them is going to be someone who has real smicha. And so in the 1900s, when they once again want to come back and to renew smicha, because there is this messianism and this desire to return to Israel and hasten that redemption, so plan A didn't work in the 16th century, so only a fool would repeat that. Instead, they go to plan B, which is the Radbaz's advice. Rav Yisrael Shklov's image as a halachic is highlighted here, for this was the first time in history of Jewish messianism that there was an effort to assign the 10 lost tribes a central role in the redemptive process through the renewal of ordination. Right now, those 10 tribes hold the key. They hold the magic key to be able to hasten the redemption. The 10 tribes had always been taken into account, particularly during the times of Messianic Awakening, but only insofar as it was believed that they would be discovered at the end of days. In other words, the only reason people cared about the 10 lost tribes was there was a belief that when Mashiach came, we would also find the 10 lost tribes. And therefore, if we find the 10 lost tribes, that must mean that Mashiach is coming. Obviously, again, this whole conversation is so applicable to our day and age, when we are finding those 10 tribes from Ethiopia and Africa and India and all around the world, and they're returning to Israel, right? We believe that comes hand in hand with the coming of Mashiach. Never before, though, had they been seen as those who would renew ordination. In other words, they were simply accompanying Mashiach, a sign of the Mashiach. But now, Rav Yisrael of Shklov says, no, they are the conduit through which Mashiach is going to come. On October 18th, 1830, Rav Yisrael Shklov, leader of Perushim in the land of Israel, put his signature to an extraordinary epistle, a letter. The letter was given to Baruch ben Shmuel Apinsk, then residing in Tzfat, who was dispatched to locate the 10 tribes. Rav Yisrael begins the letter by telling of information he had received from rabbinic emissaries who had recently been to Yemen and claimed to have seen with their own eyes a man from the tribe of Dan. Now, we've discussed these 10 lost tribes previously, and this obviously plays heavily into that discussion. According to their report, the Danite told them where the 10 tribes resided and recounted their power, their wealth, and their righteousness. Here is the letter. For it is in fact widely known from our holy sages that before our righteous Mashiach arrives, there must first be in the land of Israel the great court of ordained judges, Sanhedrin. And since we have heard clearly that you have a Sanhedrin of ordained judges, let there be chosen several ordained sages who, in their mercy on the generality of God's people, will kindly come to land of Israel, our father's inheritance, and ordain some of our scholars, so that a court of ordained judges will exist in the land of Israel, on which the beginning of the redemption is contingent. So he heard a rumor, and the rumor was that in Yemen, in the tribe of Dan, there was a group of people who had real smicha, ish mi pi ish from Moshe Rabbeinu. Now, that's not totally unreasonable, because if you play back the Gemara that we saw last week to the story Rav Yehuda ben Bava, if you go back to the Gemara of Yehuda ben Bava, up until then, real smicha existed. And that was during the Roman conquest of the land of Israel. So it could be that around that time that the Romans exiled, or that the Babylonians exiled, right? Of course, we know that it was earlier, Ashur, right? But before the Romans had exiled, the 10 lost tribes had already been dispersed. And so it could be very feasible, says Rav Yisrael of Shklov, that sitting in Yemen are people who had authentic smicha. Because it wasn't only till later, in the time of the Romans, that real smicha had ceased. And so therefore he implores them, if there are some of you who have smicha, come back to the land of Israel, reconstitute a Sanhedrin, and that will be the beginning of the redemptive process. In any event, the mission of the 10 tribes came to a sad and unnatural end. Baruch was murdered on January 12th, 1834, by a Yemeni, Imam Yahya. That setback did not daunt Rabbi Yisrael of Shklov, who tried to send an additional emissary and even sought to enlist Liran's help in doing so. But the rebellion of the Falahin during the summer of 1834 and the destruction of the Jewish community in Tzfat seemed to have ruled out any possibility of a renewed mission. Why am I sharing this with you? I'm sharing this with you because I want you to understand that when we learn halacha, certainly halachas like this in the Rambam, I wanted you to see how throughout history, this Rambam was used in different ways. In 1838, it was used in an enormous conflict between Rav Yaakov Beir Rav and the Maralbach about the reconstitution of the Sanhedrin, of Smicha. Why was it so important? So again, according to many historians, that was not an insignificant time. It was bookended by the Abarbanel's prediction in 1492 that the expulsion of Spain wasn't taking place in a vacuum, but rather it was the beginning of a messianic process. It was bookended on the other end by Shlomo Molcho's prediction that in 1540 Mashiach was going to come, and there was this fervent messianic vibe that was permeating throughout Tzfat that serves, according to many historians, as the backdrop for why Rav Yaakov Beir Rav was so insistent on creating an infrastructure of smicha, of a Sanhedrin, all based on that Rambam, that would be the first steps of Mashiach. And then ultimately, I wanted to show you in this article by Ari Morgenstern, based on sources, that this was reused in the middle of the 19th century, again, in an attempt to serve as the magical key to the bringing of Mashiach, of the bringing of redemption. Only there, they didn't make the mistake that Rav Yaakov Beir Rav made, which was trying to get all of the Rabbanim to agree on one rabbi. But rather what he does, he goes to the Rabbah's advice. And he says, if I can't get all the Rabbanim to agree, maybe I can go to plan B, which is locate and find these 10 lost tribes, specifically the tribe of Dan. If I can find those who have real, authentic smicha and bring them back to the land of Israel, then that can begin the redemptive process. And so our little sources, right, of smicha, and the history of smicha, and when smicha started, and the Rambam's discussion of how you would reconstitute smicha, again, has served as the backdrop to numerous stories in history, sad, tragic stories of people who really believed that they were living in messianic times. And again, if we were giving a different type of a class, we would go into a modern commentary on religious Zionism, on the notion of proactive versus passive attempts to bring Mashiach, and certainly the whole conversation about the 10 lost tribes and how that plays into the conversation as well. So this ends our discussion of the smicha controversy, both in 1538 and in 1830. But I hope it gave you not just an interesting halachic discussion, but also broadened it out to understand and appreciate some of the history behind it as well, both in ancient times and in modern Zionist history as well. Everyone have a wonderful, wonderful